The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast, Dr. Taz.
Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show. Today, we are going to find more solutions to help you find your power. That's right. We're calling this show Your Power RX, and joining me today is Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. Dr. Lyon is an integrative medicine doctor that practices in both New York City and San Diego. She's trained in cognition and nutrition, as well as functional medicine, pioneering what's called muscle-centric medicine by looking at the body holistically and targeting the muscles for optimal health through nutrition and lifestyle. Welcome to the show, Dr. Lyon.
Hi, Dr. Taz. So great to be speaking to you.
I am thrilled to have you on the show finally. I know we met back in August at Mindshare and connected and been trying to connect in New York as well, but really excited to bring you to my audience and let them hear about the amazing work that you're doing. Before we dive deep into that, tell us just a little bit more about you and how you landed in sort of this sort of expertise or niche of integrative medicine. I'm just curious to see how it evolved.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. I actually grew up in this kind of medicine. My godmother was one of the pioneers in functional medicine. Her name is Liz Lipsky. So way before functional medicine and IFM, there was a group of leaders, thought leaders, and she was one of them. So she's a nutritionist, and I moved in with her when I was 17. I graduated high school early and moved in with her, and it really changed the trajectory of my life, and I started studying nutrition, and before I went to medical school, I knew that that was the route, that there was food as medicine and nutritional sciences was really a key to underlying processes. So that really gave me the perspective of where I am now. And then when I went to undergrad, I studied human nutrition, vitamin mineral metabolism, and I studied under one of the world's leading protein experts, Dr. Donald Lehman, and he is big into protein metabolism, branched-chain amino acids, and then putting that kind of all together, as well as being an athlete, gave me this perspective of muscle-centric medicine and muscle being the organ of longevity.
Interesting. So describe to us in a nutshell kind of what muscle-centric medicine is. For everybody out there that's listening, they're like, well, what do you mean muscle-centric medicine? We all work out. What does that mean? So talk a little bit about that.
So it's the concept that muscle is the organ of longevity. We often think of muscle as just locomotion and the architecture of the body, but it's actually the infrastructure. It is an endocrine organ that requires stimulation through very specific nutrient signaling as well as resistance training. In addition, it's an endocrine organ, so it secretes things like interleukin 6, and it is the key site for glucose metabolism. So right now, everybody focuses on being over fat, and adipose tissue is the problem. But it's really the skeletal muscle integrity and insulin resistance that starts way earlier, years before adipose tissue and hyperglycemia and all of these insulin and inflammatory markers show up in the bloodstream. Insulin resistance in the skeletal muscle begins many years before. And so it's about keeping the muscle healthy and targeting that as the primary driver for positive change rather than focusing on weight loss.
Interesting. Okay, so what we're essentially saying then is that the muscle, just like your ovaries or your thyroid or your pituitary, should be considered an endocrine organ and is playing just as much of a role in what's happening with blood sugar, what's happening with insulin. And for all of you listening today, you've probably heard us talk about or heard me talk about insulin resistance many times, where at a point in your metabolism, literally there's a switch that gets turned on and your insulin levels are high on average, your blood sugar levels run high on average, and you go into a fat storage mode rather than a fat burning mode. So in this conversation, you're identifying, rather than all the other hormone imbalances and everything else that we often talk about in integrative medicine, you're zeroing in, so to speak, on the muscle as being a major player in all of this. How does somebody take that information and then move forward? Like at what point in kind of our health journey do we need to be thinking more about muscle and less about all the other hormones and organs that we think of as typical endocrine organs?
Yes. So muscle is very interesting. When you think about muscle as a unit, as the metabolic unit, it is the largest site for insulin-induced glucose disposal. So 85% or more of what you eat is disposed in the muscle as glycogen. So when you think about a program and all of those things, the first thing that you really want to target is muscle, because what happens is insulin resistance in the muscle happens first, and you increase your glycogen storages, which is the storage form of glucose that happens in the muscle. That becomes full. And when that becomes full, it shuts down lipolysis, which is fat burning in the rest of the body. When your listeners want to target fat loss, it's not about losing the weight. It's really about contracting their skeletal muscle, lowering their inflammatory load, excess calories, really focus on higher protein, and balancing each meal that they have with a target in terms of how can they optimize their muscle through muscle protein synthesis and deplete some of their muscle glycogen. Because when you do that, then you can lower inflammation, and then, of course, there's hormone receptors in the muscle and things of that nature, thyroid receptors. So the first thing that people can do would definitely be to train fasted, resistance training fasted, and putting in really proper effort. And that would mean going to failure and really fatigability within that skeletal muscle training.
Interesting. Now, when we're thinking about skeletal muscle and muscle-centric medicine, and really thinking again about the muscle as being a mediator in inflammation and glucose and insulin regulation and all these other hormone processes, you know, where do we begin? Do we first start with eating for good muscle health? Do we start with a workout program for muscle health? Where do you start with all of this? Because I think for many of us, we just think of the muscle or the musculoskeletal system as something that our trainer handles, or, you know, that we deal with at the gym. So is there sort of a holistic or well-rounded approach when we're thinking about muscle-centric medicine?
Absolutely. The first 30 days, I put my patients on an anti-inflammatory protocol, and that is dietary and supplement-based. And one of the things that is really important is to lower immediate inflammation. And how I do that is I either put them on a protein-sparing diet, and that's a very specific way to do that. They can look that up. The Cleveland Clinic has a protocol that's been used for many years on a protein-sparing diet. I tend to really reduce their carbohydrates for the first 30 days, and their carbohydrates I can give them before or after a workout, depending on where they're at. And it's really about increasing their protein to, you know, I start with 1.5 grams per kilogram for their ideal body weight, and it's really important to understand that the concept of where our protein, our nutritional dietary protein intake came from. The recommendations came in the 1940s when they were trying to help soldiers in World War II, and they're based on nitrogen studies. So that data and that paradigm of thinking is very skewed in terms of what we know. So back to what your original question is, what do? They definitely start with nutrition, and it is 30 grams of protein three times a day as a minimum of a high-quality protein. And I like to keep their carbohydrates 20 to 30 grams so that I don't stimulate an insulin response, because they're already insulin impaired if they put on weight regardless of their numbers. I don't usually wait for their blood levels of insulin to be elevated. If they put on adipose tissue, then it's time to get that off. And then there's a number of supplements that tend to work really well. Ascorbic acid is great for lowering inflammation. And they can do a vitamin C flush and then calculate 75% of what that is. So that would be a tissue saturation of vitamin C. And I'm happy to provide that to your listeners. And then they have 75% of that a day. And that lowers inflammation, of course, curcumin and resveratrol.
So that's let me stop you for just a second, because I know I can see the audience and I know what they're thinking. So they're like, wait a minute. So you've talked, you know, we've talked on this show about so many different types of diets. We've talked about the ketogenic diet. We've talked about the anti-inflammatory diet, the way it was originally sort of founded with lowering gluten and lowering sugar and lowering dairy, and then really paying attention to healthy fats and omega-3 fats. This is a turn for what I know the audience is used to hearing, because I know for many people, you know, protein at 30 grams three times a day, or even at 1.5 grams, like you're saying, per kilo, which for, you know, if you take somebody who's roughly 150 pounds, you know, they're going to be eating, you know, close to 100 grams or over 100 grams of protein a day, which is a significant amount of protein. talk us through just that, because there's so much debate about protein. And then you also mentioned high quality protein. I think for people that are out there and are struggling with weight and struggling with trying to understand what direction to go in, you know, maybe help us with that a little bit. Like, you know, how is this high amount of protein justified? And then what is a high quality protein in your opinion?
Absolutely. So first I want to say that all my information is based on over 30 years of research, and not just my own, but standing on the shoulders of giants that have been in this field and are extremely well respected, like Dr. Donald Lehman and Sue Phillips and Doug Patton Jones. And the research is really, really clear. And then, of course, I did my fellowship at WashU in nutritional sciences and geriatrics, which looked at muscle health and aging. And so it's first important to understand that what we know about protein came from a very skewed perspective in terms of what we think of as high protein. I just want to mention that it came from a nitrogen studies, which is what they took the byproducts of protein. They collected urine and feces and all of these things in 18-year-old college-aged men. So the protein recommendations that we currently have are from a very skewed perspective. They were metabolically healthy, and they were young men. So if you fast forward that to what we know that that what is now thought of as high protein, which is 30 grams, is necessary to stimulate muscle protein synthesis. In order to do that, you have to have enough protein. It's either it's a signaling called mTOR, and it's either on or off, and you need 30 grams of protein to actually trigger that system. And we know that muscle is so important for aging. When you see sarcopenic people, you know, as they get older, their muscles shrink. That is actually preventable. And when their muscles shrink, they also get metabolic dysregulation. They tend to get diabetes, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's disease. All of those things start in your 30s within the muscle. So it's really important for muscle integrity in terms of 30 grams of protein. And 3 times a day is optimal just to maintain healthy tissue. In terms of the safety of protein, the data is also very clear. Your readers can look at it, that bone is made from protein, and there's been a lot of studies with vegans and vegetarians, and they have a much lower bone density as they age and a much higher risk of fracture. And that is, again, well documented in the literature. In addition, protein in healthy kidneys is actually known to enhance glomerular filtration rate and not be detrimental. It's only when they have kidney disease, typically from diabetes, that there's an issue. And again, this is all very well documented in the literature and not my opinion. So it's really important for people to have that perspective, that there's just a lot of, you know, protein is a very emotional issue because it has a face.
Totally,
so it's not like carbohydrates and fat. And and that can skew the science with the emotion.
That is so true, especially when the trend right now is vegan and vegetarian, you know, being vegetarian and being plant-based and all these other things. So, you know, that leads us to the next question. Like, what do we do about protein? Like, what is high quality protein? I think already, like, the big myth of, you know, meat causing all the heart disease out there is being debunked. But we do know it is tougher to digest. It's harder on the gut. You know, it does play into things like colon cancer and all that other stuff. So how do we get, like, this almost 100 grams of protein in a day for the average person? What is the best way to get that in?
I like that you brought that up, and I also like that you prefaced it by vegan and vegetarianism, because there are options, because we're now much smarter in nutritional science. So for every 1 ounce of protein, and that would be, let's say we talk about gravity-bearing protein, and that's the kind of protein that makes people emotional, so that's turkey, chicken, bison, ostrich, if anyone eats that, and beef. That all has, for every 1 ounce, it has 7 grams of protein. So if you multiply 7 times 4 or 7 times 5, you'll be at 28 to 35 grams of protein. That would be, for a meal, an ideal amount. And the reason that is it's based on the amino acids. It's based on the branched chain amino acids. And if you think about it, and you think about nutrition labels, they break down carbohydrates and sugars and fibers. They break down fats in terms of saturated, unsaturated, but they don't break down protein in terms of quality. They just say protein, and not all protein is created equal. That's the next frontier will be, they'll have an amino acid, profile so that you know that you're getting enough for these requirements. So the 30 grams is related to the branched chain amino acid leucine. And that would require, so it's 2.5 grams to stimulate your muscle, and that would be the equivalent of 30 to 35 grams of protein. In terms of fish, fish has less protein, so that has, for every 1 ounce, it has 5 grams of protein.
Wow, what a difference. Goodness.
Yeah, so absolutely, and that's also based on the amino acid profile. So a usable information for your listeners would be to get at least, you know, if they're not going to do 3 meals of high protein, to get the 2 meals in of 30 to 35 grams would be great. And if they're vegan or vegetarian, they can supplement with a branched chain amino acid. So if they were going to have a hemp protein source or a rice or pea source, to add in an extra branched chain amino acid.
More with Dr. Taz coming up. All right, my health-seeking friends, we know you want to be healthier, and that starts with eating better, but with not enough hours in the day, it can be difficult to cook a healthy meal every night. Not to mention you've probably tried before with good intentions, but have slipped back into old eating habits. Well, don't beat yourself up. We know it's hard. That's why I want to tell you about Sun Basket. Organic and sustainable ingredients and delicious recipes delivered weekly to your door. With Sunbasket, it's easy to stay on track. And today you can get $35 off your first order when you go to sunbasket.com/wholehealth. Now, the people at Sunbasket have been kind enough to send me a couple of boxes. So what have I made? The Carrizo Chili is unreal. The Tuscan vegetable soup on a cold day is just what the doctor ordered. The two bean enchiladas are delicious, and the Saigon beef sliders are fast, easy, and so good. Now imagine the ingredients and recipes being delivered to your door without the time it takes to shop. And I gotta tell you, it's exciting when you get that box and you take it off the stoop and bring it inside and it open up in the kitchen. It's really a lot of fun. And best of all, each delicious, easy recipe is ready in about 30 minutes. With Sunbasket, you have total flexibility. You can cancel at any time, skip any time, and choose any meal plan you want. Just go to sunbasket.com/wholehealth today to learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/wholehealth for $35 off. sunbasket.com/wholehealth. Dr. Taz is also brought to you by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Yeah, I'm not kidding about this. Pretty cool. Health IQ can save you up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. And these savings are exclusive to Health IQ. Now, you have to qualify by taking a Health IQ quiz or other lifestyle quizzes like the Cycling IQ or Running IQ quiz. You can also get additional savings by submitting actual data such as race results. And Health IQ doesn't just take this info and pass it on to an insurer. They are with you every step of the way from interest to application through underwriting to the final policy enforcement. Yeah, pretty cool. Now, by being healthy, you not only live a better life, but now you can pay less for life insurance. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/Taz, that's T-A-Z, or mention the promo code Taz, T-A-Z, once again, when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Once again, check it out online at healthiq.com/Taz. And now back to the Dr. Taz Show.
Wow, but I mean, for my patients, like a lot of us that supplement with extra protein and protein powders, you know, a single serving, if you look at it, is often just 15 grams. Should we be supplementing more? Should we be doubling up on some of those protein powders and things like that for folks that are dependent on those as their protein source?
So it depends. That those protein sources will have a leucine content. And as long as the leucine content is 2.5 grams, then the 15 grams is fine. For example, whey protein, for every 15 to 20 grams of whey, they'll have to look on the label, but that should have 2.5 grams of leucine, and then that's enough because leucine is very, very high in whey. if you look at a rice protein blend, they tend to be lower in the branched chain amino acids, and you'll need more. So if your listeners, their actionable item would be to look to make sure that they're getting 2.5 grams of lysine. It's the best thing that they could do for their health, really, because if an individual gets sick, your muscle is the amino acid reservoir, and it's really necessary for health, right? So this is all preventative medicine.
Oh my goodness, this is such great information. So your must-have
I'm so
is
glad.
your must-have is 2.5 grams of leucine per day. Now, again, I know what someone's going to ask me.
They're going to be like
per meal. I'm sorry, 2.5 grams of leucine per meal. Now, what if someone out there is listening to this and they're like, "Well, I'm just going to go get a 2.5 gram leucine pill." Does that count?
That is an interesting question and something that is actually very important. You should never supplement a single amino acid and a single branch chain by themselves, because the way that it works in the TCA cycle is that for every leucine that you metabolize, you require an isoleucine and a valine. So what that means, in essence, is it's not a good idea to supplement a single amino acid because it drives these metabolic systems in a different direction. They're meant to be ingested as a whole picture, right? As the essentials, the non-essentials, really together. And that's why I don't recommend using branched chain amino acids necessarily alone. There is some benefit. However, to really get an optimal benefit for muscle protein synthesis, then you would want to add that to a meal. Of course, there's so many metabolic benefits to having branched chain amino acids. It's not just muscle protein synthesis. That it, you know, leucine generates glutamine, and we all know how important glutamine is.
Right.
It generates
love glutamine.
Alanine for gluconeogenesis. It's really good for fat metabolism. There's so many other benefits.
Wow. So do you think we just have it wrong? Like, as we talk about, I'm thinking about all those patients and listeners out there, like, you know, you have everybody trying to lose that last 10 pounds to people that really are struggling with obesity, and they're getting all kinds of information today, like go keto, you know, go plant-based, go this, go that.
Yeah.
Do you think we've just got it wrong, and we really need to be telling these folks, let's up the protein and switch out the insulin resistance and all this metabolic dysregulation that's happening, and that's the source?
So before I say that, I want to say that everyone is very biochemically different. And now, with that being said, there are some vegans and vegetarians, maybe 2% of the population, that have the gut microbiome and the genetic capacity to do very well on a vegan vegetarian diet. And you know those people. You see them and they look incredible.
Yes.
They've never felt better.
Yep.
There are different phenotypes that do really well with certain things. I will tell you, however, from my training, so I trained for 17 years, right? And then a postdoc at WashU. I will tell you that I know we have it wrong. I've examined the science. I've talked to the best in the world. I know where our protein recommendations came from. I ran an obesity clinic. I'm in private practice. I know that we have it wrong. And there's all this thought about how that protein causes insulin stimulation and all of these things. Well, it actually causes a very small phase one insulin response. So that doesn't drive fat. And the other thing is people will say, well, but there's branched chain amino acids in the bloodstream, and that's why protein causes insulin resistance and all of these and those kinds of things, but it's actually just a dysregulation of the system. And so it's really about going back, looking at the science, seeing in practical application, the people that have struggled with their weight, typically what they're doing hasn't worked, right? So ketogenic diets tend to work very well for men because they have higher levels of testosterone. I, again, see patients on a clinical level. They may have females will have a honeymoon period of maybe 3 weeks, and then they all gain weight. And they're metabolically dysregulated. It's not the body, unless, of course, they're an outlier, the body for women isn't designed that way. So, I know we have it wrong. I know that our recommendations, if you just go back and look at the history, came from a place that was incorrect.
Oh my goodness. So you're making my mother right. And so in our family, if I look back genetically at our family, they ate meat you know, three times a day. And my mom to this day swears that coming to this country and not having the accessibility to the type of meat that they ate was responsible for her weight, her hair loss, for so many other things that happened to her. And it's been interesting to do the push and pull on that, and also just experiment with myself personally as in with different diets, and know that I am not one who does well without meat. I need, you know, I need to have a decent amount of protein from mixed sources in my diet, or I don't do well. You know, again, for people out there listening to you today, Dr. Lyon, and trying to understand how to make this actionable and how to move forward. You know, and also you made such a great point about how diets have to be biochemically individualized, because we have different genetics, we have different microbiomes, we're going to respond differently to different diets, and the latest diet trend may not be the right trend for you. And I think that's really important for everybody out there who's trying to find their power through food to really understand that. You know, what are some great starting steps that anybody out there can do? I know one that I've learned right away is that, you know, we need to up our protein and have protein with every meal, and we need to roughly aim for that to be around 30 grams. We need to make sure we're getting enough leucine on a daily basis with every meal. Leucine is a important amino acid. We need at least 2.5 grams with every single meal. What would you say a number three would be, you know, just for the average person out there, and then we'll switch the conversation in a second to somebody who's truly insulin resistant and struggling with obesity. But for the average person out there, just trying to lose those last 10 pounds, what would maybe step three be, in your opinion?
Would be lowering their carbohydrates. So the ratio would be really a 1-to-1. So not having, if you're going to have 30 grams of protein, you can also have 30 grams. This is for a healthy person trying to lose that last 10 pounds, is that the 30 grams of protein, not more than 30 grams of carbohydrates, and their first meal of the day is the most important. So let's say, for example, they want to have protein later on in the day. So the standard American diet and the standard American eating system is to have a fruit smoothie or a chia pudding or something, which would be maybe plant protein or lower protein in the morning. I would say you switch that, because the muscle becomes more insulin sensitive as the day goes on. The first meal is your most, you get the most metabolic bang for your buck. So you get that first meal right. That first meal, have it be high in protein, lower in fat, and lower in carbohydrates. You really set yourself up now to be very metabolically efficient. So that first meal should be 30 grams. It could even be 35. Of a high-quality protein or a whey protein or a mixed blend protein that has 2.5 grams of leucine while keeping their carbohydrates low, they will be on fire. You could add in 5 grams of MCT oil, which helps the body burn, you know, it's very thermogenic. It works in terms of burning more like a carbohydrate without adding carbohydrates, and is excellent for the brain. That would be the first go-to, for sure.
Wow. Okay.
And of course,
and then,
even number four would be, don't, you know, snacking is not necessary. It, you know, we can talk about that, but also not snacking on any kind of carbohydrate, right? If you're going to snack, it should be a little bit of protein and a little bit of fat. I don't recommend to snack on fruit or any of those things. It's really discrete meals is ideal.
Three meals. And then with the carbohydrates that you're talking about in the 1-to-1 ratio, so are we allowed then to have 30 grams of carbs at every meal, or is it 30 total per day?
So it would be 30 per meal. This is for an average person who is metabolically healthy. And that 30 grams, I definitely prefer it comes from vegetable plant sources and not grains or beans or those kinds of things. If they're going to do that, that should really be a post-workout kind of a meal. And that would just be liberal. I tend to, you know, it's not about seeing how much you can get away with, but it's about where your carbohydrate tolerance is and really what your specific biochemistry is. So I start low in carbohydrates, allow them to lower their inflammation and lose weight, and then we can adjust from there. Some people can do great on 90 grams. Some people need less. Some people need more to function. But keeping it in that range, having that balanced meal of 30 to 30 of a 1-to-1 ratio is a good place to start, for sure.
And then the last variable for many people nowadays with the trend of intermittent fasting, what do you feel like the right intervals between meals are? You know, what is the right space between, you know, one day's meals to the next day's meals? Does that play any role in this overall metabolic equation?
It absolutely does. They have looked at time-restricted feeding or intermittent fasting because it's an alternative approach to weight management. And the data is very good on that, actually. I just recently was looking at a study, and their protocol was an 8-hour fast, and they fed from, and this is actually what I utilize in my clinic, they fed from 12 to 8 p.m., and the interval was feed at 1, at 4, and at 8, and that worked well. You have your high-protein meal 3 times a day, and I've seen really great results if someone is hormonally challenged, if they suffer from emotional eating or binge eating. It helps reset that leptin, and it helps really reset that drive to feed. I start people 1 to 2 days a week on that. And again, it's really, the body is, we're animals. So minimizing chaotic eating is really essential. Mm-hmm. We teach our body what to feed and when to feed.
So again, those intervals for everybody out there are at 1, 4, and 8. Those are your key times.
Yep. And if someone is training, yes, go ahead.
No, just trying to make sure. I want everyone to understand clearly. So their first meal of the day would be at what time?
1 p.m.
1 p.m. And then they would eat again at 4. Mm-hmm. And then they would eat again at 8 p.m.?
Yep.
Is that right? And then the next day they would turn around and eat at 1 again, or they would go back to regular, like 8, 12, you know, whatever their normal meal times are?
Whatever their normal meal time, and it should be consistent. And that's how I started.
Gotcha.
And they can do it. They could do it 3 days a week. They can also eat from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. if they wanted to push that interval.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that would be then they would eat at 9, 12, and 4. But that tends to be harder for people because once you start the feeding cycle, you're hungry. I'm sure your listeners and maybe even yourself, that when you skip a meal, you're not really hungry. And then when you have that first eating opportunity, it really kind of kicks up those hormones, and then you're ready to eat, and it doesn't matter. You know, you've worked all day, and now you're really hungry. So it's just really getting to know the person.
And there's so much emotional eating with evening eating too, where it's family and it's, you know, the letdown from work and all those other things. And I think that's often the biggest trap that many times I find myself. I'm like, I'm not truly hungry, but I just am doing this to be with everybody else. So that's a challenge as well. So sometimes, you know, that 1-4-8 might work better in those situations so that you're still participating in family life, so to speak. But then, you know, you go back to your regular eating thereafter. Wow, I feel like I talked to you for another hour and a half on this topic. I don't want to lose some critical things for anybody out there. So we talked about the person trying to lose that last, you know, 10 pounds or so. What about the person truly struggling with, you know, over 50 pounds to lose? How do these recommendations, if you could sort of summarize, and honestly, I might have to bring you back to dive deeper into that. How do these recommendations change? And then my other question would be for the practitioner, for those of us out here, you know, is there metabolic testing that you advise us to be doing to help patients understand this concept a little bit better?
Sure. So let's talk about the person that is really, really overweight. It is vital to drop their inflammation, and typically it's excess calories. So now they're in their cycle where their adipose tissue is secreting things, and they're secreting inflammatory cytokines, and the hormones are typically disrupted, and that adipose layers the muscle, so it becomes very hard to actually trigger the muscle and have hormonal balance and those kinds of things. So these people, you really want to focus on 30 days and say, listen, the next 30 days are going to be challenging, but you can do it. And what you do for them is you really drop their carbohydrates, and their first meal of the day is between 30 to 40 grams of protein, high quality protein, and then each meal has between 30 to 40. You really can up it, and it's very, very safe for 30 days. They can go up. I mean, the studies have gone up from, you know, the baseline recommendation is 1.6 to 2 grams per kilogram per body weight, but the data actually shows that if an individual overeats protein, they don't put on weight. It's a very weight neutral substance because it's so thermogenic. So those individuals, I have them eat protein in their discrete meals, and we really cut back their carbohydrates. Their carbohydrates are from greens only. They can have 10 to 15 grams of fat per meal, and that would be 3 meals. and drink a ton of water and know that it's okay to be hungry and really put them in a time-restricted protocol and have them do that for 30 days, all of my patients lose weight while maintaining skeletal muscle, which is key. So you put them on a light resistance or whatever they will tolerate because you stimulate the skeletal muscle either through dietary triggers, which is protein, or through resistance training or exercise. You do both of those things. I have never had someone not lose weight. And I've never had someone not lose the good weight, right? So it's all about maintaining the integrity of the muscle. They may lose a little bit, but you can protect muscle loss by increasing your protein.
So the keys for the person out there today who's listening, who's trying to lose maybe over 50 pounds, is begin the day with a very high protein meal, somewhere between 30 and 35 grams. Reduce your carbohydrate load. And if I'm hearing correctly, that load goes down to 30 grams total almost, and most of it should be coming from vegetables. You need to stay hydrated. We stop disordered eating. You know, they have to be on interval eating where they're eating at set intervals. And anything else you would advise that person out there today listening who's just struggling, trying to get some of this weight off?
They'll be able to do it. They could even increase their protein more. There's no harm. As long as they don't have underlying kidney disease, there's no harm. Fasting is really key for metabolic regulation. And another thing that is very helpful for people is heat therapy. Infrared sauna or convection sauna tends to really help with lipolysis and detox because these pathways and these receptors, these androgen receptors and hormonal receptors tend to be saturated. So that is also really, really good to know and helpful for people.
So this has been amazing, and we didn't even get to supplements and all the other things, which I want to maybe on another episode, but you know, I just think for everybody out there who is trying to understand the weight equation, trying to understand all the different aspects of diets and trends and all these other things, understanding how important skeletal muscle is honestly, I hate to admit this, Dr. Lyon, but honestly, I don't think I even was that educated on all of this. So it's definitely going to help me as I move forward and work with my patients and really be thinking through the importance of protein, which quite honestly is those are my roots. I mean, our people ate a ton of meat and a ton of protein,
right?
You know, if you dial back the centuries far enough. So it's a fascinating area of information and ongoing work. And I'm so glad you had to share it. And I think you have a book in the works. And I was just thinking as I'm talking to you, what an important book that's going to be. So I'm excited to hear when that's coming out at some point. But for now, we'll stop here, and if my listeners want to connect with you and learn more about what you're doing, what's the best way to find you?
They can find me on my website, and I have my protocol, a great starting protocol for all your listeners, and that's www.drgabriellelyon. They can download a free protocol. They can also find me on Instagram. I'm very active on that, and that's Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. And my Facebook, I'm having trouble right at this second, which is my next call after this. They can find me on Facebook at Gabrielle Lyon DO. And they, of course, can reach out to me through email, and that's glyon@ashcenter.com.
Perfect. So I thoroughly enjoyed this, guys. I hope you all did too. And as we're all trying to find our power and be our best selves, I always talk about how food is your number one power source. What a powerful episode to really think through how we should all be eating to optimize our skeletal muscle, thinking through muscle-centric medicine, and then realizing that protein, we may have it all wrong, and we really should be rethinking this one.
We do. It's crazy. But if you think about it, there's so many things that we've gotten wrong, right? So if
True.
You think about history, right? So if you think about history, you think all of a sudden when they did the food guide pyramid and we should be eating grains,
yes.
Then all of a sudden we realize we had it wrong. This is the same thing. People realize with fat they had it wrong. Protein, we've got it wrong. And it's the biggest modulator of health there is. Fat is inert. Carbohydrates are damaging. Protein is the key. Protein actually heals the body. It heals and stimulates tissue.
Such important points to remember. So for everybody out there, up your protein and spread the message about how protein does still have a role in the equation and we need to be thinking about it more. Dr. Lyon, thank you so much for joining us. I know everyone is going to love this episode and we look forward to having you back.
Can't wait. Thanks so much.
Thank you.